Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Smash in the coffee. Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Smash in the coffee.
Hope you like this theme tune because it's the only one I could find with bagel in the lyrics. They're in short supply. This is Bridget's Bagel and I'm Bridget. If you pick this podcast for unusual ways to fill the role with a hole, you're in the wrong place. Who knows, I may come up with a little bit of this and that by way of ingredients in the future, but I'm really not much of a cook. I do a mean roast chicken, but that's what I serve at every dinner party, so don't expect to be asked twice. Instead of smoked salmon and cream cheese with a dash of pepper and lemon in my bagel, I'm filling it with personality, people of all sorts, and stuff I'm really interested in. There will be names you know and some you don't. But that doesn't mean you won't enjoy listening, because I plan to make this very entertaining. So who's Bridget and why a bagel? Well, in a nutshell, which is smaller than a bagel, I've been a journalist since 1982 and have interviewed film stars, theatre stars, directors, politicians, royalty and regular people, just like you and me. Frankly, it's the regular people who have the best stories to tell, and I hope to include them, along with lots of familiar names, in my bagel. I've hosted radio shows, presented on TV, and if you're old enough to remember Channel 4's Big Breakfast, you may even remember me. I was the one in the hat. To be clear, it wasn't presenting a breakfast show that made me choose a bagel. It's actually the versatility of the polo-shaped roll, which was accidentally invented by a baker in Vienna in the late 17th century. Apparently, he made the rolls as a tribute to the then King of Poland, Jan Sobieski III, who loved battles and horses. So the baker shaped the dough into a circle and called it a bugel, which is Austrian for stirrup. No, I don't see it either. I'm equally baffled by the pairing of a Polish warrior king with a small Jewish bread roll. As a Jewish journalist, I've eaten more than a few bagels and interviewed some of the world's most famous Jewish stars, but they aren't the only part of my repertoire, just as there's more to a bagel than cream cheese. Truth is, you can put anything in them, which is what I'm doing on this podcast. So you can expect everything from chefs to showbiz chatter to beauty advice and more. Trust me, at my age, I still need advice on pretty much everything. I should add that my initial intention was to co-host with my 13-year-old daughter under the banner Two Peas in a Pod, but she's too busy talking to her friends on the phone most of the time. On those rare occasions she does drop in, you'll know, because she's me, but with more opinions. So, what's inside my first bagel? Well, I felt I had to kick things off with someone who champions food. And right now, the definitive food champion is Netflix Phil Rosenthal. I'm sure most of you have seen his show, Somebody Feed Phil, which is now in its fourth season. And when it premiered, it was Netflix's number one unscripted show globally. It's still one of the top 20 shows on the platform, which is no surprise because we all love food. And watching Phil get served in some of the world's most fabulous and fascinating restaurants is as good as it gets right now. And who knows for how long. Of course, Phil didn't start out with a knife and fork, but with a pen, as he co-wrote and produced the American hit sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond with Ray Romano. So Phil is not just a guy with a big appetite and lots of air miles. He is a major comedy talent and people really like him. I really like him. Wherever he goes, people just want to get to know him better. And it's interesting that grumpy Larry David always drops Phil into cameo roles in Curb Your Enthusiasm because he contrasts so nicely with Nasty. But I'll let Phil tell you all about that because he's my first guest and he's delicious. I've seen all the shows more than once. And when you've watched somebody eat that many meals, you can't help wondering, Has he ever eaten something that was so disgusting while on camera, he wanted to spit it out?
Yes. Did you see the first series, I'll Have What Phil's Having?
Yes, yes.
Do you remember when I went to Hong Kong and I was sitting at a hot pot restaurant and there were these eggs on the table? They looked like half-cut hard-boiled eggs, but they were the Chinese 1,000-year-old eggs. They're not really 1,000. They just taste that way. The whites are, I noticed, a brownish yellow. And the yolks were a bluish green. And this is achieved by taking an egg, coating it in lime and ash, and burying it underground for weeks to months so that it has this chemical reaction and it kind of hard boils the egg, right? And it gives it this flavor. Oh. And the flavor is, and I thought I was being hilarious when I popped one in my mouth, a whole half an egg, because the woman I was sitting with was so tentative about trying it. I said, oh, come on. And I just popped it in my mouth. How bad could it be? Well, the first thing you taste is very, very, very rotten egg.
Oi.
Oi. And then that flavor goes away because this wave of ammonia takes over.
Oh my God.
It is like, imagine a cat peeing.
Directly into your mouth.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Oh, and you are so discreet.
Maybe the bravest thing I've ever done is to chew and swallow that thing without spitting that. But yes, that is the one I always go to as the worst. That was the worst.
Yeah. You know what made me laugh though? Because I'd said, I really need to be cheery. I need to feel cheery. And watching you always makes me feel so cheery. You know, like you have, so there've been some really down days over winter. And you were in San Francisco, which is where my brother-in-law is from and everything. Ah. And you were in the fish restaurant. And that night.
Yes.
The following morning.
Yes.
You had obviously eaten something during the course of that day.
Right. And it was not that fish restaurant.
Thank God.
People assume that it must have been seafood because that's what makes us sick usually, right?
Yes.
But it was not that. I can tell you what it was.
Oh, did you know?
And we didn't have it. We didn't put it in the show. A lot of times if I don't like something or it's just okay, I don't put it in the show.
Oh, really?
I'm showing you the very best of every place. Why be negative, number one? I have a certain amount of minutes in the show. Why fill it with negativity? Unless it's hilarious like that egg. Like when I ate that egg, you can hear my brother, the producer, laughing.
Yeah.
Behind the camera. He thought
oh
it was
my
the
God,
I,
yeah.
I turned every shade of that egg, right? But most of the time, you know, how much fun would this be? Oh, we're flying to Bangkok. Here's a man who's perfected this dish for 50 years. Here you go, Phil. What do you think? That's okay. Right? That's not a show.
No.
It's not like I'm acting. You're seeing my genuine reactions. But I figure I want to show you the best stuff. I want to show you because the whole purpose of the show, it really isn't about the food. I mean, I know it's a big part of it.
Yeah.
It's like the laughs in a sitcom, right? That I know those reactions and that food is might be why you're there, but I'm trying to do that in an effort to get you to get the real message, which is about connecting to the people and about the joy of traveling and how travel is the most mind expanding thing we can do in life. So, and make the world better, right? So that's why would I taint that message with just like okay food or negativity. Showing you the best. I'm showing you the best stuff.
I can imagine that isn't the case. So there must be restaurants that tune in expecting to see themselves.
Of course.
And they're on the cutting room floor.
Yes. And some of them, though, I place on my YouTube channel.
To make them feel better.
Well, just because the content is perfectly good. We just have a limited amount of time. And for various reasons, like we have another type of food that hits the same notes, you know, or the scene seems similar. So it's not better or worse. It's just
how it is.
Editing. That's editing. But you're not like, you won't see those bonus scenes and go, oh, here's something that he hated. I'm just not showing you. First of all, why would I want to hurt their business? You know, I understand that I have a certain amount of power that comes with having a platform, right? People see it and they say, oh, don't go there. He hates that, right? I don't want to be, it's just my opinion anyway. And just my taste. I don't like black licorice. So I should put black licorice businesses out of business, right?
No, definitely not. I love black licorice, actually.
Yes,
I love it.
Life. So if she had a show, she would show you the best black licorice in town.
I think I do want to know where that is. I do want to know where that is.
I think it might be in Copenhagen.
Really? They do the best black licorice
there. Oh, fantastic. Yes.
Really?
She went crazy. Yeah, because it's soft and beautiful. There's a brand, starts with an L.
I'll find it. I certainly will. And then I'll tell everyone. Because of how we are, and obviously we've lived vicariously through your getting on a plane and going somewhere else. If you could have breakfast, lunch and dinner in three places now, like you could just go, where would you go? Where would be the...
So right off the bat, I'm starting with a breakfast in Barcelona at the Boqueria market. And that's in the show that we did in Barcelona, where you sit at the counter and they fry the eggs in olive oil. And it's eggs with squid and eggs with foie gras and eggs with, I love a breakfast with eggs. By the way, I love a full London breakfast. I'd be very happy at the Covent Garden Hotel having their breakfast. It's a bit marvelous, right? Or at Claridge's. A breakfast at Claridge's where the toast for an American is a revelation. Just the toast.
In that little, do they fold it? They do it in squares, in the little racks. Yeah.
I don't know how you do it, but you've perfected toast in England where it is this beautiful, almost glass shattering crisp on the outside and soft and beautiful, but still warm on the inside. We don't have that.
Claridge's though, isn't it? I'm sure I could show you places that would serve you really crappy toast.
But that's like everywhere, right?
No, exactly.
So, but by the way, I could name 100 places where the breakfast, like in Bangkok, for instance, just the fruit that was out on the table at breakfast. Just the fruit. I didn't need anything else. First of all, your water is in a coconut. It's the chopped up coconut. They put the straw in. That's your water glass, right? And then the fruits that you never had before, the different mangoes, the different papayas, the different, you don't need anything else. It's because it's the best fruit you ever had in your life. That's where, you know, these tropical climates, Bangkok and Brazil, you know, this is where fruit goes to party, right? This is where, you know, in Rio, what did they say? 30 different kinds of mangoes, right?
Fruit is amazing. Fruit in and the fruit markets in, I mean, that was when we've been somewhere and you go there, like we had been to Brazil to see that. It's just lovely. You go, oh, I wonder if he's going to go to, and then you go there. That's just so cool. So what about lunch?
Lunch might be, you know, like, I don't know if you saw in season 4, the Mississippi Delta. But I went to, I could name 100 places, but this is just popping into my head. This place, Jim and Samela's, which is you sit communally at a table with people and they do like all the greatest hits of soul food and barbecue. And this thing came out a deep fried lobster tail. And I thought, what? Do we have to deep fry everything, America? Do we have to? Can't you just? It was, it's actually chicken fried, what they call chicken fried, which is as if you had the coating of a fried chicken onto different things. They chicken fry steak, they chicken fry, you know, and they chicken fried a lobster tail. It sounded almost obscene to me. Damn it, if it wasn't the best lobster tail ever, because that coating, not only is it delicious, but it seals in the meat in the lobster tail so that it steams beautifully and is soft and moist and yet has the flavor of the seasonings that they used.
Oh, I'm always starving, like literally. I've you know, like they say, never go to the supermarket when you're hungry. I feel that I have to feel the same applies to your shows now.
Yeah,
because if I watch it, anything that you can get your hands on after I've watched somebody feed Phil, it's like I'm gonna eat it now. It's crazy. And
maybe eat first and then watch.
Exactly, that's it. I just have to eat something. Here's what
I tell people: watch, get hungry, and then order in from a place that's the heritage of the show you're watching. Look, we're locked up at home, right, for a year. The way we travel without moving is by having it come to you. And you can actually be transported through a cuisine that you never tried before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the lovely part about it. Yeah. It's funny, really, because you're the person that, you know, people, they always ask celebs that question about what's your last meal? You know, like if you're on death row, God forbid.
Yes.
I actually say it in the London show.
I say it in the London show with Jay Rayner.
Oh, yeah, with the fish and chips. I remember with Jay.
That wouldn't be my last meal. My last meal, I've thought about it a lot because I get asked it a lot, would be a return to childhood favorites, right, to complete the cycle. So on the plate would be the things I loved as a child. Pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, fried chicken, ice cream.
Maybe finish
with my mom's matzo ball soup, right? And he said, oh, well, you should really finish with breastfeeding. And I said, thank you for ruining this whole premise.
But you've been immortalized. Since I last spoke to you, you were immortalized on The Simpsons.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you have to be a star to get on that show.
Yes.
How did that phone call go when they called you?
I don't know. Over the years, I've gotten to know them and I love them and I've made my love known to them. And I know Jim Brooks. He's actually a personal friend of mine, but that's not why they did it. They did it, I guess, because the show has entered the vernacular and they thought it would be funny to do a bit. And they do bits. They do bits at a million miles an hour on that show. They're every 3 seconds is some visual joke or quick joke. You know, my scene is 5 seconds, but they don't care if the whole world gets it or not. It's going to be funny to you if you know the show.
Exactly.
And they're fine with that. And I'm, of course, thrilled.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was, you were at Moe's, you're actually talking of pickled egg because it was an egg at Moe's Bar. That's where it was.
Maybe they saw that episode and thought, let's do that to him.
Yeah. Because you meet up in season four with the chef who you were with in Spanglish with. So that was James L. Brooks, wasn't it? That was his
James L. Brooks movie.
Yeah.
Spanglish.
I love that film.
He cast me as a sous chef to Adam Sandler, and the consultant on the movie was the famous American chef Thomas Keller.
Yeah.
And so we became friends doing that. And in the show, we go to Napa in the San Francisco episode. I'm with Thomas Keller.
That place looks remarkable in Napa.
Well, that's the high temple of American cuisine, that restaurant, the French Laundry. You've heard of it.
Yeah, all the little different sections that you go to, and there's the chocolate part, and I mean, it was amazing to watch
He also has an empire in Napa of several restaurants of various classes, I guess you would say. That one is the high end. Then he has a kind of bistro type. And then he has a very casual fried chicken place.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And you had that. It was because you always describe it when you're there. Of course, we, as I say, whenever you're eating it, we're just like, what face is he going to pull when he bites into this? But you know what I love about the show as well? I think it's lovely that you promote the kind of, he's on that level, you get, you know, your Michelin star, but then you've got that lovely moment, I think, in Hawaii when you are with those lovely little guys that run the stall in the middle of like nowhere, and you go there with your son actually in That's right. I love that.
Well, here's the thing. I figure if my goal is to get you to travel, right, and 2/3 of Americans don't have a passport. Okay. And I dare say that we wouldn't be in the straits we're in if we all experienced a little bit of other people's experiences. So I'm trying to motivate you to travel. And I understand that the way you're going to travel is on a family vacation. And maybe you're going to splurge one time during that vacation. Listen, I know people who they go on vacation to France and every single night they want a 3-star Michelin meal. I don't want that. It's too much. You should have a 3-star Michelin meal once in your life, you know, save up for that and do that. Everyone should have that. And then, you know, maybe if you've succeeded in life, you can do it once a year. But every night for 2 weeks, that's insane to me. That's a gluttonous, crazy. First of all, it's like a 4-hour meal. It's very fancy. You have to dress up. There are people who love this. Not me. I would much rather have one and then eat street food and eat the way I want to eat with no fuss and dress like this and go and just have delicious food. I don't care. Delicious doesn't have a price.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always more real, often more real. Like the whole feeling of it is more real.
Here's the secret that people don't understand. You have a better chance of hitting something delicious because people who don't have a lot, who are making do with what they have out of necessity, this may be their only entertainment in life, their only respite in life, is this dish that they've made or it's been passed down. It's literally their heritage, right? And they're proud of it. Why? Because they took nothing and made something out of it. And you have sometimes those are the most delicious things in the world. The simplest, poorest ingredients.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Been transformed into magical, delicious things that you crave and you can't wait to eat again through seasoning and spices and love and care and preparation.
Do you think that, because obviously you literally, when I watch your shows, I make a mental note or write down where you've been and think when we go there. I mean, like, I had never thought about Singapore until the other night when you went to Singapore and just everything about it. It always felt bland to me, but you just showed this incredible side to it. I mean, you've even kind of, you've convinced me to go to places I would love to go.
My job is done. And Bridget, you don't have to write it down because if you go to philrosenthalworld.com, it's all written down for you. With
so
we'll links,
just take it with us. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can just have it and you can even reserve on the
Right, that's what we're gonna do. But how do you think we'll be able to? I mean,
how soon?
Well, yeah, I mean,
they say in the summer things are gonna start opening up and it'll be a slow rollout according to the vaccine. You know, the world will be returned to us. And my joke is that we're going to be so happy and so grateful for everything now that we can do in life. And that feeling is going to last 2 weeks. And then we'll be back to complaining. This is not a latte. This is, I asked for a large. This is a small.
That is so true. We are by nature moaners. We really are. What have you got plans? I mean, you're planning.
Well, think about it. You know, the travel industry and the restaurant industry, if it survives, is going to boom again because of all we've been pent up, right? So, and I'm sure you canceled plans to travel this year. We all did. So my wife and I were married 30 years this past April.
Oh, congratulations.
And we had a whole little thank you. We had a whole little tour planned. Venice, Marrakesh, and Paris. We're going to do it. We were going to meet friends even. It was all scheduled. So of course we canceled, but we have now rescheduled for October.
Right.
Thinking it'll be okay. And I advise everyone listening to do that, to book a trip for, you know, a year from now, less than a year from now, I think is going to be okay. And the worst that happens is you have to postpone a little longer. But, yeah. You know, people tell me they watch the show, they're sad because, oh, look how it used to be. Look how you open the doors in Rio and there are 500,000 people outside for Carnival. Yeah, it's not happening now, not happening this year, but next year it'll be back. And plan your trip to Rio if that's the place that looks great to you.
I have to interrupt at this juncture because a big feature of Phil's show has always been in past seasons to do Zoom calls with his mum and dad, Helen and Max. Sadly, during season four, Phil lost his mum, and it was a very difficult time, but his lovely wife, Monica, has been with Phil's dad, Max, during this past season four, and including his father, is something that Phil really, really enjoys.
It was hard, but, you know, he's an amazing fellow, and I love connecting with him on the show and sharing him with the world because he's truly funny. And he's a repository for all the Jewish jokes of the Catskills of the last 200 years. I don't know how he does it, but every single time we connect, I say, "You have a joke?" Yeah, he has.
I love it. You can see where your humor, I love it even with the, you were doing the Hawaiian, dancing and the Aloha dance. And those names in Hawaii were fabulous as well, because it sounded like you were saying hello to people when actually you were just saying their names. It was so brilliant. It was brilliant. Have you had offers to do shows that are kind of food, but they go further than that, that you've got other things that you're thinking about, that you're planning or?
Well, now I'm known now as this. And I think that every show is about far more than food. By the way, last year I was getting off a plane and I was collecting my luggage and a man said, "Hey, you're the food guy." And I said, "Oh, okay, I guess I am. I never thought of it, but yeah, I guess I'm the food guy." And he goes, "Listen, I'm just the guy." So if I'm known as the food guy, I should be happy to be known for something, right? So that's fine. That's fine.
But they love you. They love having you there. Everyone's like felling when you come in. They love it.
Thank you. But of course, the show, if you're watching, really isn't about food. I'm just using that and my stupid sense of humor to get you in to the real message, right?
Of connecting
to people. And so I have other interests. You see Singapore, for instance, whole section on architecture, right? Why architecture? Why is that an interest? Why in Chicago am I talking about the architecture? Because that's what defines a place. How does a city look? That's architecture.
Yeah.
Right? So of course you talk about it. Why does it look this way, this city? What makes this city stand out from that city? That's interesting to me. And the more I travel, the more that aspect of the culture stands out to me. It's all connected.
Absolutely.
The culture, the cuisine, the architecture, the art, the history, everything, it's all connected to what? To the people who make it.
Yeah, no, and it certainly is, because the people that you meet are interesting. You always give the background to that person, you know, how long, you know, that it's been in their family for years and their family first arrived. And it's wonderful to have that kind of insight, because, I mean, that's a bit like, you know, if you're the sort of person who always speaks to people in a queue, which then you completely get somebody feeds Phil. That's it. You know, crossing the sidewalk, you talk to someone standing next to you. And if you're that kind of a person, that's what makes it.
And the terrible thing about COVID is that it took that away from us.
Yeah, I know. The hugging. I did notice the hugging. You just think, God, I don't just want to eat that again. I want to hug that again. That's kind of what it's like. You know what's really funny? My daughter, she told me today, because I obviously we're all fans in this house. She told me today that you were part of their geography lesson in her school.
What?
Yeah, hold it. One second. I'm just going to get her to tell you. One second. Madison, come here, please. She told me this morning, we were talking about it, and she said, "Mum, did you know that Phil's show came up in our geography lesson?" Because they're very, you know, that they like to get with, you know, down with the kids, as it were, in her school. Madison, although she's hiding in the wings now.
Madison, say hello.
Madison, right, Phil's waiting for you to say hello.
I want to say hello to Madison.
She's coming down now. she was really excited about it because we were right. So this is Phil. This is Madison. Say hi.
Hi, Madison. Yay, Madison. Oh, look at you. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Your mom tells me that you had us in a geography lesson.
Well, I thought I was the only person who knew about it in my class. Yes. And I'm learning about like how countries have like different top food and stuff like that. This other girl starts talking about your show to my teacher. And then everyone else starts being like, oh, I've seen that. And then it was started, everyone's like talking about it for like 20 minutes, just going on about your show.
As I told you, eventually my daughter will appear. And if I don't hold on to her, she will take over this podcast.
A big feature of your social media has been Murray, your lovely, lovely dog, who I've kind of seen him go from puppy to kind of like, you know, when he had to wear his ring that when he hurt himself, that dogs have to wear those ridiculous funnels. What's it like? Because in England, it's got much better about having dogs come into like bars, pubs. There are areas. What's it like in LA for dogs and eating out?
I wouldn't know because we got him at the start of the COVID shutdown.
Of course.
We got him the very day that they said no more flights, we're closing restaurants. We got him as a 10-week-old rescue puppy. And the blessing has been, what other time in life would you have so much time to bond with and train a puppy? They even have things online now, how to train your puppy for when you won't be available to him 24/7. Because we with him all day, every day.
Yeah, they get the separation anxiety, don't they? If
like your child. Yeah. So we're, you know, I say he was a rescue pup who saved us.
Oh, bless. I know. I mean, it's been phenomenal. The amount of people, some of them not well suited to the task, I might add.
Look at your dog looks very well suited behind you.
Dumbledore is 11. Dumbledore's 11 years old. And he's been seeing all these new little pups around in the fields and everything. But you, of all people, I mean, when things do go back to normal, you're away on these long haul travels. How's that going to feel now?
You know what? It's not that long. What happens is we'll go and film for a week, maybe 2 weeks if we do a show back to back, if they're in the same area of the world. And then I come back for a week or so. So it's really not that, you know, it's not like I'm gone for months and months.
Right.
In fact, I can do 12 episodes. I can do it within 6 months with breaks in between.
That's so brilliant because you're going to get that ecstatic welcome that dogs give when you come in through. They never know how long you've been gone. It's the same welcome.
We get it every morning.
Oh, bless. It's so good. Do you think, because you'll probably become conscious of it once you're out and about in LA post all this, because you'll see where I suppose you've never taken note of it before, where dogs are welcome and where they're not.
I you know, they're always welcome as far as I'm concerned. So I'm always happy to see a dog anywhere I go. He, you know, he's still a puppy. He's 1 year old and he still gets way too excited when he sees another dog or even another human being or anything, like whatever breed he is. And he's a mutt. He's been trained to alert you to anything new. So there can be a package that arrives and is on the table and he'll stand there and bark and bark and bark and bark and bark until you do something with that package.
Fantastic.
And it can be a person who's walked by the window or a cat in the driveway or anything that happens, you have to know about it. He's doing his job.
Oh my, you know what?
So I don't know how welcome Murray will be in society.
It's funny, you'll be tempted because I've done a lot of stories about really lovely hotels around the UK that have a dog-friendly policy. Yeah. And they don't just have dog-friendly policy. It is amazing. It's truly amazing. We went to a place in Dorset over the course of last summer, which was specifically dogs are welcome. When he arrived, there was a bowl there for him. The basket was set out at the bottom of the bed. The chef in the restaurant in the hotel actually has a section specifically for dogs, and he cooks their evening meal. So the dog is allowed in the restaurant for the evening, sits at the they will bring out, the waiting staff will bring out a meal specifically for the dog.
That is like, if you love your dog and you want to go on a honeymoon with your dog.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. I'm sure that, listen, America has set the trend for so many things. What you've also been heavily involved with, of course, is the World Central Kitchen, which is your baby. I mean, like, you're passionate about that because we've spoken about it before. How has that been going for you?
Unfortunately, there's always a need. And the real hero of World Central Kitchen is, of course, Jose Andres, the great chef. And all I've done is provide a portal for you to donate. And the way I can help is by matching your donation. So that's what I do.
Which and is so amazing.
If you go to somebodyfeedthepeople.org, somebodyfeedthepeople.org, and you donate to the World Central Kitchen through there, that lets them know that I am matching the donation.
Yeah, it's because of the fact that lockdown is on and has been and you know, and hopefully we will ease our way out of it. But most people don't see or have any proximity to that kind of need for just like being able to survive with food in that way. And
anywhere in the world there's trouble, a natural disaster, you see what's happening in our country right now in Texas. The World Central Kitchen is there. And so I just see it as, you know, this wonderful way to involve not just an organization that's feeding people, but the restaurants that he employs and the people who work in restaurants who have been closed for whatever natural disaster or COVID. They are then, the money goes to employing those restaurant people to feed the other people in need. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. Has takeout in Los Angeles grown as well? I mean, since this is, are you like a takeout family?
Yes. We were a takeout family before COVID. Now we're takeout crazy. And I actually, as bad as COVID is, and it's a tragedy for many people, it's also for restaurants, a golden age of takeout. The restaurants, and I'm so proud of them, for pivoting, and they've taken their what used to be their side business, takeout and delivery, and by necessity made it their main business. And since it is the main business, it has all of their attention, which means that the quality of what you're getting at home and the consideration for how it's going to travel to your home has gone sky high. Just fantastic. We've had some of the meals of our lives in Los Angeles, sitting around our kitchen table out of a box.
That's amazing. It's
amazing. That in England?
It has been. It has been. I mean, there have been people. There have been obviously the party, the big people that were caterers who were strictly committed to doing catering for big events have had to kind of like rethink their whole business philosophy because they're having to cater for small numbers. I mean, there have some that have managed it very well. Unfortunately, I mean, I think when I spoke to you, my sister lives in Portugal and I don't think parts of Europe have fared so well with this because especially where people live in remote, like hillside places and where their rents for their restaurants were not put on hold.
Right.
And they've still and though they've had to still think about that, a lot of businesses have gone. I mean, I suppose one of your because you bring so many great places and little places, family places to a global audience.
Yes.
One of your roles going forward will be to kind of help to boost, I suppose, boost, I mean, that's a bit, that's a big ask, but to boost those places that what have suffered so badly over this past year.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that our government needs to specifically bail out restaurants. In America, it's the second largest employers of human beings outside the government. They are the independent restaurants. And by independent, I mean the places that we frequent that aren't either the French Laundry or McDonald's, right? It's all those restaurants and coffee shops in between that are owned by families. And they are the lifeblood, I think, of a society.
Yeah, totally.
It's literally our social life is held in these places. It is our community where you and I would meet to discuss business or pleasure, whatever it is. This is where it happens. We gather around food and drink. It's just how it is. And you take that away from a society, I don't even know what's left. Even ancient civilizations, they just found in Pompeii. You saw that? They found the equivalent of a fast food casual place where you'd come up to the bar and every seat had a little hole in the bar where fire was coming out, and they would heat your food on the thing. You'd eat it right there and then go.
It's amazing.
In Pompeii, they found it.
Pompeii's extraordinary, yeah, extraordinary place for that. But that was the Romans then, wasn't it? Doing those amazing...
Just like that's the center of the street,
yeah,
is that. Because first of all, we all have to eat. And second of all, human beings quickly realized that this is, you stop to eat. And since you're stopped anyway, let's talk.
I have a question.
You've got a question?
What countries do you want to do next?
There's so many that I haven't been to yet. You know, there's some even in life that I haven't been to. Like, I haven't been to India. Have you?
I have. I launched a magazine in India, actually. Yeah.
Can you come back to London again?
Yeah.
By the way, I want to come to London again anyway, because I love it so. I love it so much. And I have friends, and now I have new friends like you that I want to come and visit, and we'll go eat.
During this time, we have watched you, Larry David, try to avoid lunching with you, and when he was forced to, he was in his MAGA Make America Great Again hat. Your relationship is that strong that you could get through that without laughing?
I know Larry now for a few years. Every word out of Larry David's mouth is an episode of his show. It could be an episode of his. In fact, the very first thing he said to me was at a party. I meet him, this is many years ago. I say, hello. He says, you think it's all right to throw gum in a fireplace? Because he just done it. And he thought, well, maybe he shouldn't have done it. And of course you could see a whole episode coming from that.
Yeah, right? It's all him.
So he's such a character. He's so like, in some ways he's nicer on the show than in real life, which he's not really interested in being friends or going to dinner unless he wants something. He doesn't like if you say goodbye and you shake hands to say goodbye, and then you talk a little more and you go to say goodbye again, and he would go, we shook hands already. God forbid he should shake hands again. Or like he's not the guy you're gonna hug. Hi, how you doing, Larry? Yeah, he's not that guy, right? He's like, so you wanna have lunch like that? He would say, why do we have to have lunch? Doesn't see the need.
He's
hilarious. And yeah, so I love when he casts me, he knows my persona versus his persona. He knows what's funny about it. And of course, I love playing into it. This is the second time I've done his show. God bless him for, first of all, promoting my show on his show. Very nice of him to do. And I don't mind that he's making fun of me. I love it. I love it. And then in my way, I can make fun of him as well.
That's absolutely. Really, which is what it is. And it's just that fabulous. And also that,
by the way, he wore the MAGA hat. And I thought in the scene, I thought by the time this is on, that will be dated. You never want to do topical jokes in comedy, because by the time the show is on, that joke could be dated. But he knew something I didn't know, which was, no, it'll never be dated, the MAGA hat.
No, it's the hat never to be seen in, especially in LA, where everyone around you in a restaurant is clearly somebody that definitely didn't make that vote.
Yeah, but sadly, there's enough places in America that welcome the MAGA hat.
So so you literally now have to wait for things to lift and be until you can start the schedule for the new season?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, we don't know what the future is with Netflix. We have no idea if they want to pay what the show costs. We don't know. We're negotiating right now. They've told me they do want more episodes, but it's not set yet. Because as much as I want to do it, it still costs what it costs. And, you know, it has to be paid for. And we're trying to work that out. Second of all, I could have been doing the show this whole time. I could do a show set in COVID, just eat outside. We could call it Somebody Feed Phil Alfresco. Right?
That's a lovely idea.
You know, the only difference would be I couldn't hug you, but we would eat outside. I would wear a mask until it's time to eat, and then safely I would eat and talk to the people. It would be the same.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
They didn't want to. They wanted to wait until, you know, the world got a little closer. A lot of people can't see ahead. They can't see, they'll believe it when they see it, in other words. And I'm talking about traveling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is true, that you and yet some, you know, like they say, if you visualize it, if you can kind of manifest it, it will happen.
Yes, that's right.
Do you think there would ever come a time, having eaten in the best and possibly the worst, that you would think about in the future ever having a Rosenthal restaurant?
You know, I invest in many restaurants.
To keep, like, as an active partner.
As a patron. Yeah. I don't expect to ever see a dime from any of it. It's a very risky business.
Yeah.
People said it's you may as well invest in a Broadway show or a boat. That's how stupid it is to invest in restaurants, right? Because most of them fail. That's just the nature of the business. Most of them don't last a year. But I do it because my family and I, Monica and I, believe strongly in supporting the arts in school, the arts in the world, the local places where the arts have been pulled out of the schools because they think they're not necessary. I always say they don't realize it's the answer.
Yeah.
No, it's the answer that the schools, the children that have the arts in their lives, I'm talking about music, theater, dance, arts and crafts, the visual arts, painting, they thrive in the subjects that the politicians claim to care about, meaning math and science, because it activates this part of your brain that makes you think.
Yeah.
Okay. Why? Because you're engaged and you have passion for it. Where would I be without the after-school theater program? Okay, so how does that relate to restaurants? To me, being a chef is being an artist.
Totally, I totally agree.
Anytime you think of putting this ingredient with this ingredient, you're now making something that maybe hasn't been made before. That's creativity. It's a creative art, like anything else. And it's my favorite because it encompasses, in a great restaurant, all the arts. Think about it. You go into a restaurant, it's environmental theater. Every sense is activated. And my favorite, sense of taste, which is no less important to me as my sense of sight or sound.
Yeah. Absolutely, that's a beautiful way, and it is pure artistry. I mean, some of the stuff that has been featured on many episodes, you know, when it comes up, and it is a work of art that arrives in front of you. It's just,
It doesn't have to be pretty or beautiful, because one, if you taste it and it's the most delicious thing you ever taste, you could care less what it looks like.
No, that's right? True.
And historically and culturally, there is no other art form where you literally take in the culture. And the whole point of my show is, you know, if you open your mouth, maybe you'll open your mind. Because once you fall in love with that bite of Peruvian food, you might be open to learning about Peru.
Totally true.
Just by asking, how did you make this? And then you get a history lesson.
It's perfect. It's a perfect combination.
Yes.
It's lovely. No, absolutely. It's lovely to know that you invest in these businesses as well, because often with people who are front of camera, you know, we have no idea about their philanthropy. We have no idea about, you know, what their kind of positive contributions are. It's like, you know, you pay it forward all the time. And that's really kind of good and heartwarming to know about.
One of the best lines ever in a movie, and it's in a Spider-Man movie. He says to Spider-Man, who's a teenager, when just discovering what he can do, his uncle tells him, with great power comes great responsibility. In a Spider-Man movie, yeah. That stayed with me. And it's of course, I feel just being a human being. That's what you do. Just if luck is bestowed on you, why not spread it around?
I really hope you enjoyed the filling of my first bagel. Phil Rosenthal, what an extraordinary man to have on a first show. Immortalized on The Simpsons, a regular on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and a man who managed to get my daughter down from her bedroom to reveal the details of her geography lesson. I really hope that you'll come back for more fillings in Bridget's Bagel very soon.
Dunkin' Bagels. In the coffee.